On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up. The new equation.
But let's go back to Omicron and the rollout of booster doses. We are first of all joined by Margaret Harris from the World Health Organization. Margaret, thanks for coming on. You might give us a sense, because there's different countries operating it to different timetables. Is there any scientific consensus yet as to how quickly a third dose maybe ought to be issued to try and get around the effects of Omicron?
Good morning, Gavin. No, there isn't yet, because really the evidence on this is still evolving. A lot of countries have added the third dose, and remember, there are many, many different vaccines out there, and they have different mechanisms. So the evidence that may apply to one particular vaccine is different, is maybe a different set of evidence for another vaccine. So we are certainly assessing the evidence as it comes in, but at the moment, it's still a relatively open question.
I suppose then that means, Margaret, that if we should be a little bit slow to try and compare different countries, because you might have the UK, for example, which vaccinated a lot of people with the AstraZeneca vaccine. Ireland didn't use it quite as much. And then if they're talking about rolling out the third dose 3 months after the second, that maybe we shouldn't necessarily be comparing like with like.
Well, precisely. And also we're finding, we just did a review of the mix and match. So some countries may have given two doses of one, and then they find that they've got a different vaccine. And we are seeing that you may get an advantage, but depending on which particular ones you used again. So the evidence on all this is evolving. But I would say to people, do get vaccinated when it's your turn.
I'm mindful not to try and over-egg the pudding, because I don't want to be accused of creating any more alarm than is there. So do we at this point know how much, and I use the word very carefully, worse Omicron might be, both in terms of how quickly it spreads, how it might get around vaccine efficacy, and also how badly sick you might be if you were to contract it?
So those are very important questions. And thanks to the South Africans and their extraordinary level of scientific accumulation of the scientific evidence, but also the reporting of it so rapidly and transparently. We do know that in South Africa, it has caused a very rapid rise in cases. Now, the important thing there is they actually had very low levels of transmission of Delta at the time. So Omicron came in there and really caused a very rapid spike. Now, in Europe, we've already got a very, very big outbreak of Delta. You know, globally, Europe is driving the pandemic. 65% of all cases over the last week came from Europe, and they are still mostly Delta. So we don't know yet whether Omicron has an advantage over Delta in that circumstance. So what I'm really saying is there were very different pictures epidemiologically. And again, on the severity, South Africa has a young population. Its population structure is very, very different from Europe, which has got a much older population and people with many more underlying illnesses. So South Africa has always reported sort of a rise in its previous waves, a rise in younger people, and hasn't necessarily seen the severity early on. So again, the information from South Africa isn't really giving us a clear enough idea of what's really going to happen in Europe. We're going to have to watch that evolve.
There's probably also the fact, Margaret, isn't it, that the fact that South Africa is coming into its peak summer months, so the idea that you might have a lot of cases but maybe not much of a hospital burden has to be taken in contrast with, it's basically got the meteorological equivalent of this being June in the Northern Hemisphere, and if it was to run riot here, it would be at December, and it's a very different picture.
Well, again, certainly in summer you have different illnesses, other illnesses, I mean. So in winter you have a lot of different issues. I mean, particularly when you have weather problems as well, you have more car accidents, you have more respiratory illnesses of another kind that fill up your hospitals. In terms of the spread, the seasonality doesn't seem to affect this virus, except that in warmer months, it's easier to do more things outdoors, and this virus doesn't like it when we go outdoors and we distance. You know, it wants us to crowd together and come together and expose ourselves.
There's another sort of big question around all of this, which is that if we now consider vaccines to be, largely speaking, a three-course dose, that, you know, when we originally thought of the vaccines as being two doses and done, and now we maybe have to revise that, whether this now means that fewer vaccines would be available for the developing world. And I know the WHO has been very vocal about Western or richer countries hoarding more vaccines than they need and withholding them from the rest of the world. Does the fact that vaccines are now becoming a three-course thing and that they might need all three doses to get around Omicron, does that change the picture a little bit?
Well, certainly supply, lack of supply to the rest of the world has been a huge problem all year. And in fact, that one of the reasons we were saying get the highest risk groups vaccinated at the same time around the world was to prevent the people who are most likely to have a long illness with this getting sick, because that's when the virus has the best chance to develop a variant. Now, indeed, as we've understood how the vaccines work, what they do, many countries have decided or that they need the third dose or the extra dose in the regime. We have said, please ensure that you free up the supply, but it's not simply dose for dose. It's also things like making sure you haven't booked up huge contracts ahead of time, so that the paperwork means it's impossible for those vaccines to be freed up for other countries, if you see what I mean. But we've also asked that technology be transferred to the countries that are lacking vaccines, so that they can make the vaccines where they are, and also that the intellectual property be waived, so once again the vaccines can be made all around the world instead of relying on a few places to supply the entire world.
Just on that final note, Margaret, before I let you go, just about that idea of waiving intellectual property, you often get people saying that if you were to waive intellectual property on vaccines like this, that it would be something of a chilling effect, that you can't expect the likes of a Pfizer to continue to refine their vaccines or to adjust them for the likes of Omicron if they don't get to own their own work afterwards, that they're less likely to try and put in the legwork in future. What do you say to that?
Well, so this is an old argument that's been going on for a long time, and we're not saying forever. We're just saying while we have an emergency. And this was very much discussed, and the model is really HIV, that there were a lot of arguments with HIV. When HIV treatments became possible to make generics that were made essentially in India, the HIV death rate in the poorer countries just dropped dramatically because people could finally get access. So we're not saying that they should lose the intellectual property long term, but just waive it when there's an emergency. And then, of course, they should benefit from their excellent work.
Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization, coming first from Geneva this morning. Thanks very much, Margaret, for joining us on the line.
On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.